Today's featured guest, the silver investor, David Morgan. David Morgan joins us here. He writes the Morgan Report and runs silverinvestor.com. Welcome back, David.
Chris, great to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back. You know, we were talking before the show about the greenback rally and just what it's meant to the markets. On the one hand, obviously, you have a flight from the EU where there's the Greek exit issue and other problems there. So money fleeing from negative interest rates, you know, what a bargain that is. So the U.S., the greenback just, you know, looks good by comparison. Still, it's an ailing currency. Tell us what this means for investors.
Well, right now, what we've seen is a flee into the dollar, and it's because people perceive that it's a safe haven asset. And actually, relative to other currencies, it probably is. Having said that, the main premise of my work and many others in this sector is that fiat currencies always are destroyed. And the proof is very easy for anyone that takes just a few minutes to research the Federal Reserve itself. It's $13 worth about force today. So that's a huge deflation over the last 100 years or so. And now we're kind of arguing over, you know, how strong that last 4 cents worth is. And right now it's actually stronger than the other currencies that are out there because it's superior from the aspect as there aren't as many uncertainties as there is, let's say, with the euro right now, with the Greek, Spain, Ireland, Italy, et cetera. So when this started recently, I'm talking very short term here, we actually were seeing gold and the dollar go up together. And this was perplexing a lot of people because they felt that, you know, they go the opposite directions, gold up, dollar down, dollar up, gold down. And yet I expect to see that continue over time because the smart money will be moving into gold. Money that doesn't know any better will be seeking safe haven into something that's not as good, and that would be the U.S. dollar. So it doesn't surprise me.
We saw surprising dollar weakness somewhat in the commodities, with the exception of West Texas Intermediate crude. And this would seem to be indicative of separation, if you will, from that lockstep with the yellow metal and silver with this reserve currency. Should we expect more of that? I mean, should we be focusing less, I guess, on the greenback?
I think so. I mean, it's more than the reverse of the dollar. It's, you know, there's arguments both, you know, all over the place. And you have people like, you know, Harry Dent that says, you know, it's not a crisis hedge. I contend it is. I contend that in an inflation, deflation, stagflation, or some name we haven't made up yet, that the more uncertain the financial / monetary system becomes, the more people seek certainty, regardless of what the uncertainty is. Again, inflation or deflation or something in between. And that means a run to gold. And that is what we've really witnessed. We've seen a run to gold by China, Russia, India. We've seen a run out of gold and a run to paper from the Anglo-American Empire primarily. You've seen this, the establishment maintain that it's a barbarous relic and it doesn't have any meaning in the financial system and it's not money, it's only tradition, and on they go with their same old saw that's been proven through, you know, thousands of years of history to be a lie. That's the only monetary metal, silver and gold, both the only two monetary metals that have survived. Doesn't mean that their value hasn't changed. It has. But so have the economies. You know, I mean, you know, you could buy for a silver denarius in Roman times. What would you buy with a dime's worth of silver today? Well, you have a lot more options today than you would have back then. Anyway, I digress, but that's the idea.
Obviously, gold, silver, long-term, the go-to asset classes. However, you're also known for your technical work, and we both have a penchant for that. Talking with Jim Rogers last night, he also agrees with this thesis. The monthly, the longer term, even in the near term, we've been treading water for 2 years here, and it looks a little ominous, you know, despite the bounces we have from week to week. It looks as though there might have to be a final washout. He's waiting for that. What do you think?
I disagree, but I've been wrong before. Anyone that's listened to me either privately or publicly, and I admit it, I don't get it right 100% of the time, and no one else does. But regardless, just interviewed Avi Gilbert. I met him at the PDAC in Canada recently, and he believes exactly the same issue, that it looks like a setup that there will be one more washout bottom. And so I interviewed him for the Morgan Report that just got published a couple days ago. And he goes through it, and it's, you know, very much a benefit if he's right to people. And if he's wrong, then buying at this range isn't going to hurt you. If you don't know where the bottom is, the best approach is a dollar cost average. I mean, and if you want to trade it, there are ways to do it, which I do and teach and show, that will actually get you into the market if and only if the market itself tells you it's going higher. Yeah, and that's how I've traded for years, because I had to lose a lot of money to figure that out. I've had those days licking my wounds, believe me. Make the market prove it.
No, the veterans always, you know, talk about the learning curve. I mean, everybody from Livermore up to so many of the greats, Grandich, and most of them come to the same conclusion. You know, over time, dollar cost averaging into the trend is, you know, in the longer term, in the bigger picture, picking it up steadily over time, it's not going to make much difference 5-10 years from now, whether you got the exact nadir. Let's move on to some of the other geopolitical issues facing the markets. Obviously, we have trouble in the EU. And then, of course, we have some unrest in the United States. With rehypothecation, with the threat of bail-ins, with the threat of something like a quadrillion interest rate-sensitive notional derivative risk, $250 trillion, I get my numbers right here, in our major money center banks in the United States. Our top five or six banks are carrying about $250 trillion with a T, interest rate-sensitive derivatives. Almost every Fed funds contract that I can find is predicting with a 100% chance we're going to have higher rates somewhere around September to December of this year, so 2015. What kind of a risk do you see with so much bad debt? Bill Gross looking for a big meltdown in the bond sector. It's a huge sector. Why would anybody be taking on such low rates with the threat of higher rates and negative interest rates in Europe make the prospects for the precious metals sanguine?
Exactly. I agree. There's really no reason to do it if you have any kind of financial experience. Having said that, the trade has been to go long the bond market for a long time. Those are what usually cycles are in the bond market, these 30-year cycles. But I've said over and over, even though, you know, silver is my specialty and precious metals and the macro picture or whatever, I don't put myself in too small a box. I'm much bigger than just the silver market. But regardless, the biggest trade on the planet is going to be shorting the bond market at the right time. And the problem is, as you outlined so well, there are so many notional value derivatives surrounding the debt markets that the ability for everyone to settle is impossible. So what that means is the people that bet right and are quote-unquote making money on their trade might not get paid. And that it goes back to our original thesis about why gold, why silver, why now? Well, the reason for those questions and the answer is because there's nothing that's going to be more important than preservation of capital once this bond bubble starts to break. And that is going to cause a flee in the gold like we've never seen in financial history. It's going to move these markets into paper terms that I think I'd sound ridiculous to tell you because, one, I don't know and no one else does. But when you consider what the balance of the teeter-totter is, and you put gold on silver on one side of the teeter-totter, and on the other side you put this debt bomb that is going to explode on the other side, and you look at the mass of each, how much quote-unquote dollars are represented by the debt markets versus how much dollars are represented by the precious metals. And there's such an unbelievable imbalance that when that tries to balance, and it will, which means there is going to be an explosion, again, I repeat myself for emphasis, in the financial markets that have never been witnessed in human history before.
This pendulum has swung so far over into the paper side. It's almost as though the powers that be have just lost control of the train. You know, I mean, it's just off the rails and looking for something to careen into or off of. The system was really over in 2008. I think only people who stare at charts all day long, who have a mental defect and just love to look at patterns and charts, think back to 2008, 2009. Across the board, with the exception of, I think it was T-bonds or something, short-term bonds, I mean, everything was destroyed. I mean, I remember solid blue-chip companies trading at like 70 cents. Ford trading for like a dollar. But one thing held up, and that was gold. But I do hear unanimously across the board, in the mainstream and in the fringe even, that you can expect something much more challenging than 2008, 2009. Well, under that scenario, I've looked at the charts and you see the only thing that held up was gold. This is just a fantastic opportunity to be looking for some portfolio insurance.
Well, I just want to emphasize a point you just made, because some people think that the only place to go is gold and silver, and that's really not true. And so you need to weigh what your worldview is. I mean, do you think that we're going to, you know, muddle through? There's going to be huge disruption. There's going to be a reset. There's probably going to be a new financial or monetary system and that type of thing. And so the point I'm making is, what is the right amount for you? And no one can answer that question except you. I've suggested in the Investing Rules, which was the first real publication I did in a mainstream, you know, quote unquote, big way, is suggest 10% is the right amount for most people. And that's probably still true. So that gives you 90% to invest in what? Well, you know, stock market's been a pretty good place. I think it's overvalued, but it doesn't mean it can't become more overvalued. That's where the action's been the last few years. Real estate, if you get it right, I mean, I'm not a big real estate investor personally, but I mean, there's a lot of people I've met through my travels, because I travel all over, as you know, Chris, and I've met a lot of people whose main wealth was built by real estate. And again, if you buy it right, time it right, whatever. So there are other things, and there's always innovation out there, even in the worst of times. I mean, even in the Great Depression, that they make cornbread in a box, I think you bought for 15 cents. That was a business that started in the Great Depression. And you think, well, you couldn't have a box pre-made, you know, cornbread make money in the Depression. Guess what? It was very successful. So there's always things out there. So I'm just trying to say, balance it. The most negative feedback I get are usually for people that think that they could time the market, mistime it, they will blame me or somebody else, they overload, they put in too much, or they borrow to do it, and all of a sudden it's all my fault. And this doesn't happen often. Most people are adults or mature, but a lot of people, you know, some that aren't. And it's like, I'm on Chris's show explaining the value of having a position in the metals, not all of your earnings in the metals. I've never advocated that. Having said that, I have to give the caveat that certainly there are some people that follow my work or your work or others' work that have made the decision that that's the only place they want to be. Look, I'm free market. If that's what they decide, that's okay with me. I'm not going to tell them not to. But what I am saying is, for most people, you're better served by having a position that is going to protect you regardless of what the economy does, inflation, deflation, or something in between, and go about your business. Because a lot of people really are not that financial savvy. And that's good advice, in my view, that you just take a position, and the best way to do it really is dollar cost average. But if you're just going to do it, just say 10%. So what else is on my mind? Now, I haven't thought of this in a long time, Chris. It just came to mind. But, you know, one of my mentors, one of the men I respect the most, Harry Brown, and he came up with a permanent portfolio. And I read that book twice. When I read it, I wasn't that impressed, because I was young and, you know, too much of a metals head and maybe too overinvested in that sector, whatever. But Harry spread it out. And what you do is just rebalance like once a year. So let's say you have 10% in the metals and you bought it at 19 in 2010, and then it shot up to, you know, 48, and you just happen to be, for your particular case, rebalancing then, and that 10% is now 35% of your portfolio. What you do is you rebalance. You say, well, I have to sell some to get it back down to the 10% holding is supposed to be permanently. Because there's, you know, things vary. And then they put that into the bond market or the stock market. Anyway, it's a brilliant strategy. It's pretty simple to implement, and it does keep you diversified. And people say, oh, well, you're too diversified, you can't make money. No, if you look at that strategy, and you've probably found it on Google, I haven't tried myself, but you look at the permanent portfolio from Harry Brown, that is a great strategy to diversify and make money in almost any economic condition.
First of all, how many people called the dollar rally? But if you had a 5% investment in the greenback, you know, maybe through UUP or some other ETF or however you wanted, the futures contract, your portfolio benefited. How many people really expected real estate to come roaring back the way they did? Well, we called the bottom in 2012, 3 years early, but we didn't know the magnitude that it would come roaring back. And very few people expected the stock market rally to go without even a significant, you know, decline for as many years as it has. Frankly, I mean, Markowitz was right, you know. it's the only free lunch. It sounds like you're looking for a tradable bottom here in the precious metals markets this year.
Well, I think the bottom came in late last year. I think it was late November, early December of 2014. And we saw a print around the $14.15 mark in the silver market. Whether any actual trades took place there other than maybe one futures contract, I don't know. In fact, I doubt it. In other words, a lot of these spike bottoms that I'm kind of famous for talking about, they happen so quickly that all that means is maybe one or two trades actually took place on paper. There wasn't anybody out there that was buying physical silver that day at $14.15, I guarantee it. Anyway, the point being is I think that's it. But again, Avi Gilbert, that I interviewed in the May edition of the Morgan Report, disagrees. A lot of sound guys that I know and trust think that's going lower. So it's got to get below that level for it to make a new low. If it does, it's obviously an opportunity. If you're sitting at a computer and can trade, all day, maybe you can, find the bottom if it comes. If not, I think the best approach, just to reiterate, is just go ahead and start in here and average in, accumulate. The pros accumulate and distribute. They accumulate stock or a commodity or an investment. And they do it quietly over time so that they don't rock the market. And then they do the same thing when they sell it. They distribute it over time. And they never look for an exact bottom or an exact top. They look for a band. They look to buy within the 20% range of the bottom and sell in the 20% range of the top. And that's what they do. And so it's good to take on that type of an attitude, the professional type of an attitude. If you bought higher, and a lot of people have, and you bought the right amount, meaning, 10%, 20%, whatever, I would not recommend for most people going over, say, the 20% level. You can still sleep at night. Yes, you're off, and if you had to cash it out, and some people may, and I'm sorry that they do, but if you don't have to cash it out, got other things going on in your life, you don't have to focus on the price of these metals every day. I think a lot of people that are in the sector just get so much of a micromanagement type of an attitude about, oh my goodness, gold went up, And it's frustrating. I mean, I watch the market every day, and I have most of my adult life. I mean, for 40 years, it's, there's very few days I didn't know what the price of gold and silver were doing. It's my profession, and I can take it in stride, even though, I don't like these massive hits that happen from time to time. But we're in a quiet period. No one wants it. It's under love. No one cares about it. So we must be very close to a bottom.
I would just caution folks that if, like you say, 20%, and please no leverage, because in my experience, the professionals that I've seen who have been really successful in the industry, they don't buy bottoms. I mean, they just, and there's a few exceptions to that rule. Jim Rogers, although he's very humble, always seems to catch the bottom of every market, it seems. But for the rest of them that I've seen who are successful, almost unanimously buy higher highs, in the monthly and chart. And I'm not seeing that in the, and I can't wait for it to happen. I'll be the first one to ring the bell until I see that major trend shift. No, I'm going to miss the bottom 20%, and I usually miss the top 20%, but it's that 60% in the middle that I find the most interesting. And that's where I want people to be positioned. Not everybody can do that. And the best way to participate in the big moves is to have a slice or two of every sector that you can. So diversification is a big winner there. Any contact information for people?
Sure. The best way is just go to themorganreport.com. That's all one word, themorganreport.com. And if you're interested in our new book, you can go to thesilvermanifesto.com.
All right, David Morgan, we appreciate you as always. Look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you, Chris.